Now, what is it, we may say, that comes in the way of direct realization of the truth more than anything else? What is it that most of all prevents us from having a real knowledge of Buddhism based on our own experience? What is it that most of all stands in the way, most of all prevents us from having real knowledge of Buddhism instead of just second-hand knowledge? What is it? I don't know to what extent what I've said has been followed, or whether anyone has any ideas on this subject. But if you think, just ask yourselves, what is it that stands in the way of a real knowledge of Buddhism more than anything else? What is it? This is a question you have to ask yourselves. Supposing you haven't got knowledge of Buddhism, what stands in the way more than anything else? Now the brains are beginning to work, I can see. I mustn't expect, of course, the speaker to do all the work. What stands in our way more than anything else? Some will, of course, give the traditional advice, ignorance, or they just read about that somewhere. Or desire. Some will say, well, worldly things. Well, that could mean anything. But what stands in the way of real knowledge more than anything else? Something much more basic, something much more fundamental. I've given a sort of hint or clue already some minutes ago, but obviously it's been missed. What stands in our way more than anything else is to think that we know. To think that we know Buddhism more than anything else stands in the way of knowledge of Buddhism. This is the greatest obstacle of all, to think that we know, not to realize that we don't know. And until this obstacle has been removed, there's no progress at all. We have to know that we do not know. So in spiritual matters, even more than in worldly matters, this, we may say, is the beginning of wisdom in the true sense. Not only the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of enlightenment. We may say the beginning of progress. To know that we do not know is just as simple as that. And knowing that we do not know involves distinguishing between what we know at second hand from the scriptures and so on, and what we know from experience. And it's just this which Zen is getting at when he urges us in this second line of the verse not to depend upon words and letters. What Zen is really saying is, don't confuse these two kinds of knowledge. That is the second hand and the real knowledge. Don't confuse these two. Don't think that because you've got the one, you've got the other. If you do that, then there's no progress at all. Even worse than that, you may be going backwards. But what we do, unfortunately, is to confuse these two kinds of knowledge all the time. The second-hand knowledge and the real knowledge. Because we may say it's part of our general mental conditioning to think like this. It's part of our general mental conditioning, especially in Western countries, to fail to distinguish between thoughts and things. If we think the thought, we think we've got the thing. And then we fail to distinguish between words and thoughts. We think if we can slap a label on something, a verbal label, we've understood it. We say, oh yes, it's that. It's been labeled properly. It's understood. It's known. This is knowledge. Take, for example, Nirvana. To speak, as it were, in provisional terms, we can say that Nirvana represents essentially a spiritual principle, a transcendental reality. And it can be thought of in various ways. We can think of Nirvana, say, as the cessation of desire, the cessation of thirst or craving. Now, we can understand quite easily what is meant by cessation of desire, or cessation of thirst, or cessation of craving. It's quite, or at least comparatively, easy, simple to grasp. So when nirvana is defined or described in these terms, because we understand the terms, because we understand the thought or the idea, we think we know what nirvana is. This is what happens. And suppose one day in some work, some book, not a Buddhist work, some other, we come across a description, say, of non-desire, cessation of thirst or cessation of craving. Oh yes, I know what this is all about. This is nirvana. We apply the label, the word nirvana, to that. And we think that we know that this state, or this principle described in this book, is the same as the nirvana which we find in the Buddhist texts. But all we've really done is to equate thoughts and words. We aren't really dealing with things, we aren't really dealing with realities at all. At best, we're dealing with thoughts about things, but often we're dealing just with words about thoughts. No better than that. So this sort of conceptualizing, this sort of verbalizing, we may say, is all too common. One of the things which has struck me very much since my return from India, I often say this sort of thing, but this point has struck me, is that people, on the whole, talk far too much. Wherever you go, you hear people chattering, people talking. I remember there was an Indian teacher, a Hindu teacher recently, who said that in modern times people seem to suffer from lingual diarrhea. Isn't a very elegant expression, but it expresses the thought perhaps very well. People always want to put on a label, a conceptual verbal label, when they see something. So they look at a tree. They're not satisfied with looking at it and seeing it, experiencing it. Oh yes, look, a tree. It's green. They want to put the word, they want to put the idea, they want to put the thought. They're not satisfied with the thing itself. It's almost as though they were afraid of the thing itself. They want to put a label. And they're much happier dealing with the label than they are dealing with the thing.